home, everybody. Welcome to the coffee break. I'm here as usual with my friend Tom. What's up, Tom?
Hey guys, how's it going?
So, big things happening this week as always, right?
Oh yeah.
Maccabi is winning again.
Yes.
This is the number one thing. Forget about everything. Forget about the election. Forget about everything. Maccabi is winning again.
That's the only thing that counts.
That's honestly the only thing that counts.
Yeah.
Well, it makes us happy, right?
Of course. We're both from Tel Aviv. Yeah. We both like Maccabi.
Yep.
Yeah, for those of you that don't know Maccabi, a lot of Jewish sports organizations are called Maccabi around the world. This specific one is Maccabi Tel Aviv.
It's a basketball team.
We're talking about the basketball team. And they've been winning. They've been winning like pretty...
That at the end of the day, that's what's important.
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
Being happy and enjoying life. No, I'm joking.
And winning. That's what
winning.
Counts.
Winning. That's what counts. No matter what.
All right, let's introduce our guest.
Yeah, go for it.
So we have Emily with us.
Yes, I'm right here.
Yes. Hi.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm good, thank you.
Very happy to have you here.
I'm very happy to be here.
Yes. Wait, so how do we say your name in Danish?
Emilie.
Emilie. Yeah,
oh, what? How?
Emilie. But no one can say that. Actually, like most of my colleagues, they just gave up, so they're calling me M or Emmy or anything with like an A.
M. Emilia?
Emilia, yeah.
Emilia?
Sort of.
Let's call her Emily. Let's call her M.
So, Emily's perfect.
All right. We're very happy to have you here. But can you tell us a bit about yourself? Where are you from? What are you doing here in Israel?
Absolutely. So I'm from Denmark. I grew up a little bit outside of Copenhagen. And I am in Israel because I'm doing my PhD here in biology.
Smart people.
Wow.
Yeah, I bet our sounds guests, cooler than it is.
I bet our guests are like, wow, there must be a lot of Danish people in Israel.
There aren't.
No.
No.
Wait, so you want to tell everybody how I met you, actually?
Actually, that is sort of a funny story. So... how do you start that? So I was just before Christmas, about a month ago, I was going home.
Hanukkah.
Christmas.
It was like actually way after Hanukkah. Anyways,
I'm joking. Yeah, I'm sorry.
Hanukkah's early this year. No, so I was going home for Christmas to celebrate with my family. And then there is every year like an annual plane flying directly from Tel Aviv to Copenhagen. And all the Danes or like Danish-Israeli families... that our people have connections here, they're flying back to Denmark. Mm-hmm. And on that plane, sitting next to me, I meet Tom. And Tom is offering me gum, which is something that Danish people don't do. You don't offer gum to strangers.
I had an extra
what
one.
What is wrong with him? Was my first thought. But it turns out that Tom and I actually know quite a few of the same people because Tom is married to a girl, a Danish girl, who I met in Jerusalem about 4.5 years ago.
Yeah.
When she was doing her internship in Jerusalem, I was doing another internship in Jerusalem. And Danish people, I mean, you just hear the language and you're like, oh, can I help? Do you want to, you know, grab a beer or whatever? And... yeah, and so I know his wife a little bit, and then it turned out that my colleague's husband is teaching Tom in dentistry in Jerusalem as well, and like my former professor is from the same department, and everything just we just found more and more people in common.
Crazy stuff, but it was one of the best plane rides I've ever had. It was so interesting. We just talked for like 4.5 hours.
Something like that. Yeah, the entire flight, which is delayed. So, yeah.
So you mentioned your PhD in what?
Is in immunology. And immunology is the study of the immune system. So how we defend ourselves against all kinds of pathogens, like viruses and bacteria, even cancer.
I always pride myself of having a strong immune system.
Yeah.
It's one of the first things I tell in dates.
Yeah, you have a strong immune system?
Well, I think so, yeah. I mean, I'm never sick.
Good, that's good.
It's like, I don't remember the last time I had like a flu or something. Maybe when I was like 5.
No, exactly. But actually, that's normal. That's how it's supposed to be. But, yeah.
So you're saying I don't have a strong immune system?
Not necessarily. You don't. You're probably just normal.
So how do you? wait. So just a quick question before we get to your PhD subject. But how does? I mean, if it's our own cells that are the cancer cells, how does our body know to attack them specifically? I mean, I learned it, but it was about 3.5 years ago, so I don't fully remember it.
So, like, the body has ways of dealing with anything that's foreign, and to distinguish between yourself and anything that's not yourself. And so there are these cells in the body called T cells. They're called T cells because they're educated in what's called the thymus with a T. Mm-hmm. And there they learn to distinguish between everything that is self and non-self. So all the cells that recognize self are killed off.
As non-self.
All the cells that would recognize something that is self are killed. So you will not have cells in the body that create an immune response against self proteins,
right?
Because you would not want that. That's autoimmunity.
Aren't our cancer cells our own cells?
So they are, but what happens in cancer cells is that depending on the type of cancer and the tumor and everything, and depending on how we call it, like how unstable it is.
Mm-hmm.
So instability in a cancer cell was mean many times it has many mutations, and these mutations change the DNA of the cell, which again change the proteins that are made from the cell. And because those proteins are changed, you can now recognize those as foreign. They do not belong in the body, or like different enough that you can find them and like recognize that's, them as something that that is dangerous.
Okay, that's pretty cool. So what do you do in your PhD now specifically?
So now in my PhD and in my lab, we're researching another group of cells that are called B cells. And B cells are the cells that make the antibodies in the body. Or the B cells can differentiate or become cells that are just like tiny antibody-producing factories. They just spit out antibodies in...
Yeah, so just for those of you that don't know, imagine that there is a cell that doesn't belong in your body. The B cells will basically release thousands of little pins. Those pins stick on that cell,
yes,
and they make other cells of the immune system be much more attracted to that cell, so it's a lot easier for them to catch it.
Yes.
That's basically what B cells do, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, sort of. So antibodies, they have multiple functions, but they are a very important part of eradicating any kind of threat, being like viruses, bacteria, cancer, many kinds of like keeping us healthy, really. So what we're doing is we're actually looking at in the context of vaccines as well, and just anything, every time we encounter something that is foreign to us, it's like having the flu. So we're researching how the B cells, because when you have a vaccine, you many times you would have get the same vaccination, not just once, but twice or even three times, because what happens is that the antibodies, these little pins that attack whatever we want to get rid of, the first wave of these so-called antibodies, they're all right. Like they will bind with some kind of efficiency or affinity, as we call it. But then over time and over multiple exposures, if you're exposed to the same foreign proteins over and over again, these antibody targeting the foreign object will become better and better. So there are more of them, they're way more efficient, like way, way more efficient. And so you can generate some really, really very specific, very targeted antibodies.
Okay, so basically it's like, it's a bit like a workout for our immune system. We're basically training our body to be better at that, targeting that specific thing that causes us harm. Okay, that's pretty cool.
And then after you do make these very like highly specific antibody, you, because it's such an expensive process in a way, it's expensive for the body to generate this whole immune response in terms of energy and being sick and everything. You keep these antibody producing factories in your system, in your bone marrow for many, many years. Like, you never forget, you have cells that remember how to make these antibodies. So you never have to, you know, have to do it again, really.
It's like having reserves in the army. It's like you train certain soldiers, then you just send them back to civilian life, and then if anything happens, you call them again.
Sort of.
All right, that's pretty cool.
What? No. I'm joking, I'm joking. It's very interesting. I mean, you were saying that, well, if I try to put it in words that I understand and also people that are not from biology, the biology field understand, is you're saying it's like a workout, right? You train your immune system.
Yes.
So, but why do our immune system needs training? Isn't it something that it's supposed to do by its own? That's what I'm trying.
So the, like, for B cells specifically, and actually T cells as well, you have cells in your body that are, each cell has a certain specificity. And so when you, when something is invading your body, something like a bacteria, you want to find those very few cells in your body that are able to target this. And there would be like very, very few cells out of a gazillion.
Yeah.
And so you have to find those cells specifically, and they will target it with some specificity. So as I was saying, like, usually actually that is sufficient to clear the pathogen and like to clear your bacteria, for instance. But then afterwards, and some bacteria will require a much harsher kind of immune response raised against it. So you need to enhance it. It's okay what you have, and in many cases it's enough. Mm-hmm. But it might not be, and therefore you enhance the immune response.
So basically, it's if I'm getting this right, which I probably am because I studied this also. you have your innate immune system, the one you were born with. Okay, that basically cells going around your body asking for an ID from all the other cells, saying, "Are you are you self or are you foreign?" Mm-hmm. That's so not PC to say foreign right now. And then if they find foreign, they basically take it away. All right?
Yeah.
If they find non-self. The thing is that you also have another immune system in your body that learns. And so if you're exposed once, your innate immune system will deal with that pathogen, with the thing that potentially can harm your body. But then your body says, okay, let's learn from this. Who was that? What was that thing that attacked me? What was that thing that got in the body? And so the next time you will be exposed to it, you will have immune cells that are specifically aimed at targeting that thing.
Yes.
That bacteria or that virus, let's say. Something like that. So one of the things, for example, that I know that are very hard with the HIV virus is that it keeps mutating so fast that our body cannot attack it fast enough, and we cannot, our immune system can't learn how to identify it because it mutates so fast that it's like a different person every time. Mm-hmm. You know, that's one of the things.
Actually, so just in the case of HIV, there's actually very interesting new studies and results coming up. There's a lab that I'm familiar with in the US who have actually come quite a bit of the way of trying to develop a vaccine against HIV. But at the moment, it's quite complicated because, you say, HIV is mutating so quickly. It's very difficult to target, but there is like one small pocket, like one hole, one weak spot, like the Achilles heel of the HIV, if you want. And mm-hmm. and it is possible to target that through multiple vaccinations or immunizations to kind of direct the immune system in the direction of this kind of weak spot.
Okay, cool.
I had no idea that our immune system can fight cancer.
That's why we don't die of cancer, all of us, all the time.
Yeah, that's what saves us, basically.
Most of the time, yeah. I mean, you only get cancer when it's not working. Like something's up with the cancer is able to escape it or to hide itself or to kind of turn off our immune system.
So it's more like prevention. It helps preventing it.
Our immune system.
Yeah.
Yeah, it can fight cancer totally. Like, so what I used to do, I worked in immunotherapy which is studying how we can enhance our own immune systems to fight the cancer. And it works brilliantly. In many cases, there are really promising results coming out. That's of how you can kind of just like turn up the volume of our own immune system to go and kill the cancer.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
And they're very encouraging.
That's cool.
Interesting. Nice. I know there's a lot of non-Israeli researchers in Weizmann. Where you go, and how did you get to be a researcher there, or do your PhD here in Israel?
So it's quite an interesting story. I met the guy who's now my boss and my supervisor. I met him in Norway, actually, at a small conference. Actually, in Norway, those are usually just excuses to go skiing. I think everyone I talk to is just excited about the snow. But so I met him there. And since he had just started his own lab not long ago, and he was looking for new people, and he came and gave a talk. And I was at the time finishing my master's, so I was kind of on the lookout for a lab where I could do my PhD. And so I liked his talk. I really like what we're doing. I think it's very exciting. And I talked to him. I thought I have to talk to this guy. And we had a good connection, a good communication. And he said, like, send me an email and like we'll talk and maybe you can come visit. And so I did. Like, it took a few emails to get these like kind of absent-minded professors to respond to emails, but yes. In the end, I came to Israel for 3 weeks to just to see what it was like in the Weizmann and what the research is like, just to get a taste of what it would be like, and then I decided to come.
So
back.
would I be correct at saying? I mean, I think most people listening to us don't know what is the Weizmann
right,
Institution.
Sorry.
So it's like. I would say it's one of the leading
absolutely
institutions of scientific research in the world.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Just making sure I get it right. I mean, I used to go there
in the world.
I used to go there. There's a park in the institution.
A nice park.
Yes.
My grandma, when I was young, my grandma used to live right across the street.
Yeah,
from Weizmann Institution, and well, we used to go there on Saturdays and just to the park, right? Yeah. And I think it's a bit. I mean, it's kind of embarrassing to say, but I think maybe until the age of like maybe even 20 or 18, 20, I had no idea it's a research institution.
What they do apart from it's a nice park.
I was sure it's a park. Honestly, I was sure. I had no idea.
Yeah.
Because... And the buildings are just to keep all the flower pots and everything.
Exactly.
Yeah. I was like, because as a kid, I had no idea what it is. Kid, for me, it was just a park, right? And there was different buildings, and I always wondered what those buildings are because... I mean, I just didn't know. I was a kid, but I didn't care that much, and I just never thought about it again. And then at some point, someone talked to me about Weizmann, and then it made me realize that I had no idea.
It's crazy. My grandma, I mean, she also lived in that city, Rehovot, which is in the center south of Israel.
Yeah, it doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter. It's a very small town.
Yes.
Even in Israeli terms. And she also used to take me there. I thought it's so cool. I thought it's like the coolest thing in the world. But I'm a nerd. I'm a big nerd, you know. I'm disguising it as like a cool guy learning dentistry. No, I'm kidding.
I'm a doctor.
Yeah. All right. So, I mean, how was the response from your friends, from your family when you told them like, oh, hey, guess what? I'm going to the Middle East to do research.
So I think... actually, my friends and my family, these close friends, they're quite, I don't know if you can say educated, but they're well, they educate themselves, maybe. They know that it's not, and I mean the conflict that is obviously going on here, they know that it's not a one-sided thing. And my family as well, I think I know that people do, but I haven't really met that kind of hostility, or like, why are you going there? You're gonna get killed. And like, people actually, I think, understand what the situation here is.
No, because me and Daniel, we went to a festival when we were, I think, a little bit after the army or something like that.
21, 22.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah.
I went to a festival and we met a Belgian, a guy. The festival was in Belgium. And we met a guy that didn't know that we have internet in Israel. He didn't know.
I met many people who doesn't know we have internet.
Yeah, but that, that's
everyone has.
It's fucked up.
It's so weird. Like,
English people asked me how I communicate with other English people I was in contact with, and I said Skype, and they said, well, oh, we didn't realize you have Skype, and I'm like, why wouldn't we have Skype? And say, I don't know. You need internet and stuff like that. And I'm like, yeah. you need internet. which by the way we have, because Israel is literally called startup nation. We have internet, don't worry. We develop robots.
You should tell them that we communicate with smoke signals and stuff like that. We send male camels to each other. You know, I wanted, the first time I met Tanya, my wife, the first time I met her family, obviously I couldn't do it because I don't have the budget, but I really wanted to come in like a white dress with like black eyeliner and a hawk or something, you know, just like, hello Tanya's family, and talk like in a strange accent.
What I'm talking about is, I had an English girlfriend once, and I went to visit her in England, and then I met all her friends there. English are extremely racist people. Well, not all of them, obviously.
It's
but
a huge generalization.
I think
the
so.
People I met,
all the 40 million, 60 million, whatever people.
I'm joking. But the people I met were quite ignorant, let's say, and they asked me about internet, and they asked me if I wear towels on my head and stuff like that. And
after the shower, if you have long hair, maybe, you know.
Well, yeah. So at some point, I started, when things got too out of hand for me, I started to talk with that kind of accent. So I would
just make up stuff.
Yeah, when I would meet new people, I would be like, hello, my friend, nice to meet you. And I would give them two kisses and stuff like that. And they would be like, and then the girl I was with, she would be like, he doesn't really talk like that. And I was like,
I just love how we're sitting here having this conversation and you just made a face, but no one can see that you made a face because it's on YouTube. And we don't have a video camera. That's great.
Well, we have a video camera. We can use it if you want. But
yeah. All right.
I'm wondering about, so you said you came here for 3 weeks just to see how it is and stuff. So when you, the first thing, well, I'm guessing you read about Weizmann before, right? You read about, you knew it was a good place to come. You expected internet, right?
Yes, I did expect the internet. So it's because I'd been to Israel before. No, because of the internship I was doing, I'd done before. I hadn't been to the Weizmann before, but I knew of the Weizmann. I knew it was a good place to go. And honestly, I think like being there as well, like I already had a good feeling, but then like being there really made me realize that this is, it really is a really good research institution. And what attracted me was, it's like the feeling of being able to do anything you want, basically. Like, this is like open doors. There are lots of people who, different labs, different expertises. They just, you just ask and they will spend their time and to give you advice and like help you in various ways. And it's a good collaboration environment, and there's money enough, which is, may sound stupid, but it's actually important to do good research. As anything else. And just like a feeling of like, I can really like learn something here, like I can like many different things, and I'm not limited pretty much in any way other than my own time and
besides Weizmann, just general, like, what was your feeling when you first came here? You thought this is the place I could live in, like
I'd been here before, which helped me kind of know what I was getting myself into in a way. And knew that I could, actually, I think like the first time I'd been and when I left, I had a feeling like I could come back. Like this, it wouldn't be the worst thing to be here for a little bit longer.
And eat falafel all day.
Yeah. Which is obviously what we're doing.
We're not the worst.
What the worst. And I can think of worse things.
This is my aspiration in life, to not be the worst. This is what I'm trying to do.
I feel like,
so you did.
Yeah, I feel like so many Israelis, they're like, they feel like they're being bashed on the head by every other country in the world, yeah, so many times that their standard was like, just like us, even just a little bit, it's fine.
Yes, it's very nice to us, very important and nice to us as Israelis to hear that people like us. I think this is the this is part of the goal of this podcast, I'm guessing, is to hear about people like, maybe we should pick someone who doesn't like us as well.
But no, honestly, like many times I think people have asked me, like, so you really love Israel, right? I'm like, well, yes. I like it. I'm like, so why do you really, really like it?
Yes. Well, we're like the fat kid. We always need like confirmation, right?
Yeah.
Like, so you're my friend, right? Because everyone else hates me. Please be my friend.
Yeah. We're like technically best friends.
So how long have you been in Israel the first time you were here?
So the first time I was here about 6 months, I think.
And during what?
During my internship in Jerusalem. Right. But Jerusalem is so different from Tel Aviv. I mean, it's a different planet. So I've been here now doing my PhD for almost 2 years, and this is a different world altogether from Jerusalem. But I mean, it's still the same country. Yeah, I like it. I'm glad.
You're living in Tel Aviv now?
I live in Rehovot, of all places. Yes.
Yeah. Well, it's close to the institution. I mean, the institution is there, so
it's convenient. But I do spend a lot of my time in Tel Aviv. My friends do ask me all constantly why I'm not just moving to Tel Aviv because I'm there anyways. But maybe I will.
So what would you say is like your, I don't know, let's say not the most, like the favorite thing in Israel? What do you like about Israel?
So I think what I like about Israel, and I think what I like and what sometimes really gets on my nerves is somewhat the same thing.
Yeah.
Which is what I like, I would say, is what in here is called chutzpah, or like having a bit more guts, just believing that this is actually possible and I'm gonna make my way, and we can actually we can publish this scientific study in like really high impact journals, so we'll take the risk and we'll make it happen, and if it doesn't work, it's still fine. Like, it's just like a really like spirit of going, and just like not, I once heard someone in the Weizmann Institute say that Israelis do science and research like they drive their cars. Like, they just don't see the red light. They just continue like there is no red light.
That's insane. I'm like, I'm wondering if...
That is insane, yeah.
I'm wondering if you feel that as someone who is part of the Israeli research world, but also know other places, if you feel that that's part of what makes us, or what can make Weizmann, for example, a good institute. Like that mentality.
Absolutely. It absolutely does. Yeah. People are, men and women have more of that, I think. Just belief that, like, we can do this. Like, not holding back, really pushing forward for whatever it might be. And some of the best researchers some of that.
Yeah, I guess it's a bit like what Tanya said, that there's this, like, fighter mentality, like just go do it, you know, go get it, kind of don't let anything stop you, just go till you get what you want.
Yeah, I'm guessing this is why makes Israel a good startup country, so that's why a lot of startups like technology wise which I think research is pretty similar,
and also
technology.
Taking risks sometimes, like it's not, you know, not staying on kind of safe land, but really going above what other people
so how
imagine.
Do you what's not good about it then? This mentality.
So what's not good about their mentality is like when people believe that they are the center of the universe. In terms
wait, but
of
we're
like,
not? What do you mean?
Okay. Yeah, sometimes it feels that way. No, I think some of the same, like just believing that I am the single most important individual in this room and in this city and in this place, whatever it might be. Like just ignoring other people's time and other people's you know, around you, and acknowledging that we all have to be here and we all have to share the same space, and just sometimes just fall back and like, it's okay that someone else takes my place in the line for in the supermarket, or like, I don't necessarily have to have my way all the time. Like, sometimes I will just, you know what, it's fine, you go first. Like, maybe I was first in line, but you have small children or you have whatever, and just not standing on your ground so insistently all the time, just like, just chill, like, it's okay. Let it go. Yeah.
In your lab, do you have mostly Israelis or Israeli researchers? Or so, because I know, because my girlfriend, she worked, she did a
degree.
Exactly. A degree in biology as well in Jerusalem. And she worked in a lab there. And she had, well, they had some Israeli researchers, but they had a lot of, they had Polish and Indians and many different kinds. So in your lab, like, what's the composition?
So in my lab is mostly an Israeli lab. It's me, and then I have one German colleague, but then the rest, what are we now? 12 people, I think. So out of 12, two are non-Israeli.
And you find, like, Israelis are harder to work with? Like,
No, I wouldn't say.
Do you find the German harder to work with? No, I'm kidding.
So this specific German is very nice.
Okay, great.
But no, I wouldn't say. And like Israelis, like any other people, very different in their personalities.
Yes,
and,
yes, of course.
Yeah. And maybe they come from different places, have made... like immigrated to Israel from different parts of the world, which also sometimes makes some differences. Mm-hmm. It's a good work environment. Absolutely.
I'm honestly interested in hearing more about the work you do in your lab.
Yeah.
I know we talked about it quite a lot, but maybe just talk about it in general. If you can, I don't know, go to some specifics, if there are specifics to go into in terms of things that you think will be people will be able to understand, or I don't know, what do you think? Like,
I mean, okay. So, what project are you working on right now?
Yeah, I guess this is not my my field of expertise so much, biology and stuff like that. So, but maybe you can.
Let's try to go into it.
Have the specific questions needs to be asked, because I'm not sure what questions exactly you need to be asked, but I think maybe you could be.
So what? Yeah.
I can try and make it a simplified version.
Yeah, that'd be great.
So one of my projects that I'm working on right now is understanding how these B cells, when they go from a resting state into actively dividing cells, and these how that is governed by different mechanisms, and then when they are dividing, how do we select the B cells that are the best? And that's a really complicated process, which is what makes it so interesting.
Mm-hmm.
So the B cells are dividing in something, it's like segregated anatomical site in our lymph nodes and in our lymphoid tissue, which are called germinal centers.
Yes.
And germinal centers are composed of lots of B cells and some T cells that are dividing all the time. They're dividing some of the fastest dividing cells in the body. And they're mutating. So they're mutating to become better. But many times when you have, what happens in most of the cases actually is that nothing happens. When you introduce a mutation to your genome, most cases absolutely nothing changes. But sometimes it does change. And then sometimes it makes it worse. So these antibodies that the cells are presenting to the environment around them, they become worse.
Mm-hmm.
So they're not working as well anymore. They cannot bind this foreign, let's say, bacteria. But what can also happen in that is that it gets better. So the antibody now is not what it was. It's a new version of the antibody that binds the bacteria better.
Mm-hmm.
And we want to select these guys. These are the important ones.
Okay.
So how do we select them? And how do they become the overall dominating B cell clone? We say, like, how do they kind of become the origin of new set of dividing B cells with even better antibodies?
Okay, so quick recap. So basically, if we're getting this right,
mm-hmm.
so we have B cells in our body, and they are in our lymph system, which is like the transportation system of the immune
yes.
cells. And they're growing in specific areas, let's say like our tonsils, for example.
Yes.
If that's right.
That's.
I mean, it's part of the lymph system.
Yeah. Is
there like lymph bulges here or stuff like that?
You have lymph nodes.
You have some. Yeah, you have some in your neck. Here. But you have around your body generally, you have lymph nodes.
Your armpits and stuff like that?
Yeah, armpits. Lots of places. Many lymph nodes.
So they grow there. And what you're saying is, well, some of them mutate.
Mm-hmm.
Most of them, nothing happens when they mutate. Some become worse, and a very selected few become better. And we want these better ones.
Yes.
Okay.
Sort of. So they actually the mutations are targeted specifically to this gene, the part of the DNA that makes the antibody.
Mm-hmm.
So you're specifically targeting a region where you want to introduce the mutations, and. And then those mutations will either do nothing, make it worse, or make it better.
So can't you, in your lab conditions, can you not create the mutation that you want in the B cells?
We can.
And then just reintroduce it to the body?
So there are models like that. So actually, in my lab, we're working with mice quite a lot, because mice... you cannot imitate the immune system, the immune response in B cells in a Petri dish, like in outside of like an organism.
Yeah,
that has more than one cell. So so we use mice, and some of we do have mouse models that have, we gave them mutation that means that they already have antibodies that are way more efficient than they all would have been otherwise. Targeting a specific protein.
Mm-hmm.
But then normally, and that happens naturally in mice as well. If we give mice, if we vaccinate them with this specific protein, they will naturally make this mutation will happen at some point. And then that cell that makes that mutation will have, let's say, like a 10-fold higher efficiency binding this protein, and this one cell or these few cells that have this mutation will be selected expand and proliferate or divide faster.
So you want these specific cells to become,
and it happens.
So we're looking for these specific cells that are the best, the mm-hmm. absolute best we can make.
Yes.
At targeting invaders to our body or cancer cells, to become the norm. Basically, you want them to be the most cells in the body. Basically.
Yes.
The most immune cells in the body.
Yeah. So the rest. So the ones that are now, let's say we have a pool of cells, and then you have a few percent that are the absolute best.
Yes.
The rest of them die. We select them out because they're unable to bind this foreign invader or not to bind it as well.
Yeah.
They die. And then we are left with these few percent that bind well. And then those few percent, they expand. And now we're left with a new pool. And this new pool now has an overall efficiency that is better than what we had before. And then this new pool, we again select only the very few percent that are the best.
Okay.
That continues.
So this is something that you do in your lab. This is not something that spontaneously happens in our body.
Happens in my body all the time. You probably have it right now.
But then how do the cells that are not as good at binding or creating antibodies that bind, why do they die out?
They die out because they lack... So what happens is that on the current model that we're working with is that cells, the T cells that we were talking about before, which know how to differentiate between who's a stranger and who's my friend, like who's the self in the body, they're the educated ones. And they select the B cells with the highest efficiency. So they're like the... little helper guys, and they tell the B cells to go, like, okay, I choose you. It's like Pokemon, like I choose you, and like you go and then divide all you can, and the rest of you I'm not interested in. And if you're not interested in them, if they don't make contact, if they don't make prolonged contact, they will die. Like, this, like, there are mechanisms.
Wow. Like, so it's like the
suicide for the rest of them.
So it's basically, it's like prom night, and you have, you know, all the girls in their best dresses, and then if the guys are like, oh, she's the best looking one, all the other girls are like, aww.
And she will go and make 1,000 clones of herself.
Wow, okay. Yeah.
that's scary, man.
Okay, it's scary, man. Clones, man. No, but okay, wow, that's really cool. Okay,
it is really cool.
Really, really cool.
Yeah, it is really cool. We think it's cool.
So you said that process happens naturally, that selection process. So it's not part of what you do. So, but you also mentioned that it's your job to find those cells.
Yeah, so our job is to understand how this works. Like, what are the mechanisms that are involved in selecting these cells? Like, how do they know which ones are which ones should go divide, and how much they should divide, and everything like that.
So you could then, reproduce that process outside of so not naturally. Like, you could.
It will still be a natural process. I mean, it's the same process that happens when you get the flu and when you get vaccinated for polio or something. Like, it's the same process. But what you can do, if we understand it better, the hope is that we sometimes in the future can use that to make better
vaccines
against, but also against cancer. Like, for instance, like, how do we target the cancer better? How do we find these cells that make the optimal B cell antibodies to target cancer, to maybe dampen autoimmunity? And like, on this, if we understand that, we're better able to direct the immune response in the direction that we want.
That's pretty cool. Basically, we're trying to understand how our body works so we can use those processes. So you're not trying to find like let's say new ways or different ways. You're trying to understand how our body naturally do it, so you can then use it outside our body.
Yeah, or use it in like direct it in your body, like give you your immune system specific direction of like a recipe, or like we want you to go and turn right after, you know, the left, the first intersection, turn right, or like, you know, in that way, like directed where we wanted to go.
So you're basically finding out how our bodies work and then enhancing that and making it better.
Yes, yeah, and helping the body doing what it does already very, very well.
That's pretty cool.
I have a populist question.
Yes.
But I don't know. I think it's interesting. Like, obviously, like treating cancer right now is a lot better than it was in the past, right? Like, a lot less people actually die from cancer. But do you think, like, one day, so I know you mentioned HIV before. I know now that HIV isn't considered such a bad disease because there's a lot of ways to deal with it. And someone told me that actually diabetes is considered now a worse disease than HIV. Yeah, because there's a lot of ways to deal with it. You think cancer would become something like that, maybe in the future, the near future? So it would become something that maybe people get, but it's not it's almost non-lethal.
It really depends on what kind of cancer we're talking about. So there are many different types of cancer, and some people even say there are as many types of cancers there are human beings. Like, each human has a unique set of DNA and will have a unique cancer. And for some cancers, the treatment has really improved a lot, but for other cancers, we still don't have very good treatments right now.
Depends on how common it is, right?
And not just how common it is, but like some of this instability that we were talking about before, like how fast it mutates, how aggressive it is, where in the body, like they're really very different kinds of cancers, and they will try to evade the immune system in different ways. And that's a good question. For some cancers, I think so, yes. And already for some cancers today, we have really good treatment, which means that pretty much everyone survives. And that's why we need research, and so we can try and move forward and develop even better treatments, especially for the cancers that we don't really have a lot for today.
Wow.
Damn.
Let's do, I have a few quick questions before we wrap things up.
The coffee break questionnaire. Yes.
Well, not really, but I just
invented a new thing.
Yeah.
It's now a tradition.
All right.
Yeah.
So compared to your home country, Denmark, do you prefer the weather here or in Denmark?
That's a tough one.
That's
a tough one. In the summer, I will tell you Denmark without a doubt, because I suffer. 40 degrees and like 80% humidity is not my kind of climate.
No, it's pretty hot.
It's pretty hot. But in the winter, like now, I really like it.
Yeah, now it's amazing.
Now you can convince me to stay here forever.
Yeah, now is just the perfect time to just sit outside with a beer or something in the sun. It's great.
It's like 24 degrees outside and like a light breeze and it's perfect.
All right. Food-wise, what do you prefer?
Food-wise? Israel.
Israel?
Yeah.
Of course. What kind of question?
No, some Danish people really like Danish food.
Really like pork and stuff?
Yeah, they like heavy pork with lots of gravy and sauce and stuff like that.
No one eats that anymore. Only my grandmother.
Yeah, exactly. So your grandmother would prefer Denmark, I assume.
Yes.
All right. Where are the hotter guys? Israel or Denmark? I mean, I would say Israel, but I mean, I'm not Israel. Gay, so my... Yeah, Israel?
Yeah, but I think this is like also just like preferring what you can't have at home.
Yeah,
you know, like you always want you. Yeah,
it's like how all girls in Israel complain that guys like blonde girls with blue eyes in Israel, but if you go to Denmark, guys really
it's all over the place.
Yeah, exactly.
Huh. I guess so.
Funny. All right. Would you say that being in Israel now for how long? 2 years already? Do you feel like it changed something in your personality?
Yes, I think so.
In what way?
I think
you've became a lot more rude. No, I'm
kidding. A lot more rude, probably. No, in some ways, yes. Like in some ways, you're not completely off. Like what happens when I go back to Copenhagen and if I go to the metro, we have a very well-functioning metro system in Copenhagen, and then they have very specific directions for who can enter when and from where. So everyone in Copenhagen, being in Scandinavia as we are, stand on the side of the doors and wait patiently for their turn until everyone exited the metro, and then you can enter from the side afterwards. I go straight for it, just like the door, and everyone I just cut the line. I just like walk in because I'm still like my Israel.
Yeah, excuse Metallum. Me.
And then afterwards,
I'm the center of the universe. Sorry,
something like that. Yeah. And then like people look at me strange. I'm like, I'm so sorry. I just come from Israel, and it's like it's not even my fault. And
what else?
And maybe I think I learned to be more direct, not just thinking that I am, but then like actually doing it. Like I have many friends here who prefer that, and I think it's better in many ways. It's like, we can't read each other's minds. They just say what you're thinking. And in Scandinavia, many times you don't do that. And you just like, you know, just...
You go
with it. And you're just like, no, everything's fine. And like, it's cool. And then and it's really like, no, wait, that was not fine. Or like, actually...
Yeah, I think whatever. Israelis prefer that you're direct and just say what you think instead of just going around.
I think many people would prefer that, really. It's just like, at least sometimes. And if you're not a mind reader.
Cool.
Yeah.
All right, Em, was an absolute pleasure having you here.
Well, that was an insane one, man.
That was a good one.
We talked about cancer and like...
And stuff you never talk about, huh?
Stuff, I mean, that was really interesting. Like, it's the first time I hear about our immune system, obviously.
Cool.
But thank you so much for coming.
Yeah.
Thank you for having me.
Tusen tak. It's a thousand thanks in Danish. Yes. Tusen tak.
All right.
Awesome. Guys, thank you very much for being with us. Daniel, as always, man, absolute pleasure.
Pleasure.
Yala, guys. Shabbat shalom. Take care. Till next time.
Bye-bye.
Bye.